All right, so let's start here. Everyone, welcome to the student webinar for Libra. And of course, I'm just going to brush through the protocols really quickly. Everyone's got an open mic, so please leave yourself on self-mute unless you have a question, and that will cut down on the feedback. It will also cut back on the amount of noise interruption that we have. Let's see what we've got here. If you have problems speaking, you can go ahead and type a message in down here in the chat room, and hopefully we'll be able to see it. And so let's get started. Okay, I like to bring this up each time. I have several different slides that I rotate back and forth. But if you've attended any of these before, you've seen this before. It's worth repeating. The labors, they're a synthetic picture of how a disciple works. They go from the mental plane through the emotional plane and out into the physical plane manifestation. We can't keep everything in our head. We have to be able to work it through our bodies out into physical manifestation. This work can be very slow and very hard, and it can be carried forward under great difficulties. Often it's done in blind ignorance of the forces that are released and the results that might be achieved. But step by step, each aspirant is led along the path, learning about self-knowledge and development on whatever level you're on. This is a spiral. It goes up and up and up and up. So we start out as lowly probationers on the path as we work through these issues. And as we become disciples, we get progressively harder tests with these same issues until we become a master, until we've taken the fifth initiation, at least until we've taken the third and have moved ourselves off of the three crosses. So in all of these steps, our character and nature are tested and tried. And the qualities which characterize the form that we're using can be transmuted into those which reveal our inner soul. That progress is not limited to just disciples. We all have the 12 signs in our chart to some degree or another. Even the blank signs, the signs with no planets in it, have some kind of interaction with us through the opposite sign, through transiting planets, and through our progress planets. So they all get to play a little part in there sooner or later, one way or another. So it helps us to better understand the lessons that Hercules goes through, because they explain to us what each sign confers. And that's what Hercules' journey shows us. So, as always, Hercules faces the presiding one. He pondered the nature of the Son of Man, who is likewise the Son of God, and he thought what was needed to make him still more like his Father. Another labor must be carried out. Balance he needs, and judgment sound, and preparation for a major test and future service to the race of men. For this, let him prepare with care. And Hercules' teacher, noting on his tablets the purpose of the coming test, went forth and spoke to Hercules. Go forth, my son, and capture the wild boar. Salvage a ravaged country, yet take the time to eat. And so with that, Hercules went forth. As Hercules passed through the seventh gate, the power of the seventh sign passed through him. Remember, we always have this relationship of these numbers. He didn't realize that he faced a dual test here, the test of friendship and also of courage. He needed to seek the boar, and Apollo gave him a brand new bow to use. But Hercules, he didn't want, remember in Virgo where he killed where he shouldn't have? He didn't want to repeat that error here, so he left the bow behind and went forward on his labor with only his trusty club. He climbed the mountain, seeking the boar, and saw the fear and terror on the people all around him as he went. Higher and higher he climbed, and then he met his friend Pholos, a centaur. So he stopped and talked and ended up forgetting his task. Pholos called to Hercules, inviting him to have some wine. But the problem was, it wasn't Pholos' wine to give. It belonged to a group of centaurs, was a gift of the gods, and it was not to be opened unless the whole group was present. Along with another centaur, they feasted and drank, carousing and making a lot of noise, and that brought the other centaurs from far and wide, all angry at the outrage of them opening this cask without them, and a battle took place. Hercules' two friends were killed, and he realized that he had again become an instrument of death. So he renewed his search for the boar and left all that behind him. He followed the boar high up in the mountains, but it still eluded him. At night, he thought about his task, looking within for any subtle skills that he might have to help. He set a snare and hid, lying in wait patiently, hour after hour, for the boar. Finally, the boar emerged from its lair in search for food, and Hercules caught it in the snare. He released the boar from the snare, then wrestled and mastered it. As he traveled down the mountain, rejoicing, singing, and dancing, as he drove the boar by the hind legs, and it was a merry sight for everyone to see, and they all laughed at the antics. And so Hercules performed this seventh labor and returned to his teacher, where the presiding one told him that the lesson of true balance had been learned, but a lesson still remaining concerning the centaur, and he would find that lesson at the ninth gate. That's, of course, the Sagittarius lesson. His teacher advised Hercules to ponder on the lesson of the past and to reflect on their tests. Twice, he was told by the teacher, he had killed when he should have loved. He needed to figure out why. And Hercules stayed within the city gates and prepared for what was coming, the mother of all tests in Scorpio. Okay, so that was basically the myth, how he was sent to capture the Erymanthian boar. I may not even got that close, but we'll give it a try. And in, of course, he was distracted by his friend, and then the battle ensued, and his friends Pholos and Charyon were killed. That was glossed over a little bit in the myth, but we'll find out a little bit more about it as we go further on. Any questions so far? Okay. Libra has some marked extremes in it, depending on whether we're moving clockwise, as a disciple would, or counterclockwise, as the average man would. Because of this, it is said to be one of our most difficult signs to understand. It is just as a blind woman holding the scales of balance. Blinded, perhaps, to the outward objective sight, so that the inner intuitive sight may divine where the actual justice lies. It is an interlude, we are told, comparable to the quiet listening in meditation, a time of assessment of the past. The average man approaches Libra through the drastic tests of Scorpio, and then he rests, while the more evolved man enters into the Libra test from the sign of Virgo, with the Christ conscious stirring in his heart and mind. Think how different this interlude will be for the two men in Libra. In the one case, the balance will swing wildly up and down, and in the other, balance is achieved between matter and spirit, and all the lesser pairs of opposites. This is why in this quiet sign of Libra, we work on the problems of sex and money. Both can either be good servants or bad masters, according to the use that we make of them. Sex is a sacrament. It's an at-one-ment of the male and female to produce the forms that carry on the evolving life. And money is a means of exchange, of sharing at a distance, if not loved and held for itself alone, the gold of the miser, or the gold of the loving, giving heart. Balance is needed, and it may swing from bias and prejudice to justice or judgment, from dull stupidity to enthusiastic wisdom. There may be intrigue, the winding ways of some man-made laws that invite others to break them, or those who just straightforwardly abide. It is the Libran characterized by materialistic or spiritual attitudes. We need to remember that the signs themselves all have specific purposes and lessons that they teach us. None are bad, and all have good purpose. It is our receptivity and use of them that determines what we manifest. The example actually given in the book about it is that casual tourist living for a short while in a foreign country and then coming home and thinking that they know all there is to know about that country that they just briefly visited. Before Hercules captured the boar, he got distracted and he sat down with his friend Pholus to drink heavily. At this time, he was the soul of friendliness, seeking and finding pleasure. For Hercules, as for all those who assume the Libran labor, the fumes of pleasure must be dissipated before the greater task of self-mastery is undertaken. This time, it led to tragedy. The sudden interjection of catastrophe into the pleasure-seeking experience was harsh but necessary for the growth of the soul. Without such tragedies, the potentialities of Libra remain dormant. The Libran sets out upon his journey in winter, a time of bleakness when the personality law, life, has lost its allure. The two good centaurs that Hercules killed were known as Charion, who represented good thought, and Pholus, who represented bodily strength. This test was to show control of the emotions, the astral, the desire nature, in whatever form it may take. And it is all the more powerful the more advanced a human being is. You can't control or guide the desire nature by physical strength or by thought alone. You may succeed for a time, but then it will surge back up. The only answer is to take the boar of desire up into the high mountains. It is on the mountaintop that all the great revelations occur, where the mists of the valley disappear. An illumination can come. So any question on that before we move to the next slide? The journey. Hercules made a dire mistake. The teacher told him to take time to eat, but Hercules took time for a drunken orgy with two wise old friends. They opened a cask that was meant for the whole group. Remember at the beginning, he took every precaution not to bring weapons that would kill the boar, but he ended up killing his friends instead. So, circumstances and tests continue to crop up even when we think we've cleared the path ahead of us of all pitfalls. He had to demonstrate his fitness to take the second initiation by balancing the pairs of opposites. That's what Librans do. They weight and balance all things. It can make him appear hesitant and indecisive, but he knows that there are innumerable gradations between black and white, and he doesn't want any extremes. His quest for truth becomes changed into the development of discrimination. In a sense, truth does not exist for human beings, for all truths are but a fractional part of a greater whole. The search for those more inclusive concepts is of more importance than the assistance of an isolated fragment of a narrow, separative segment. The Libran is perpetually spinning threads of relationships, creating a sensitive network of meanings. The result of such activity is synthesis. Between the concrete and the abstract, he stands, trying to relate the two. And always there is a discrepancy, a gap between the end envisioned and the goal that is actually achieved. So halfway between heaven and earth, the Libran waits. Looking above, he sees the vision, the golden dawn gilding a snow-capped mountaintop. Gazing downwards, he beholds the sloughs and the mire that he must pass through. On the one hand, he thinks about those high ideals, and on the other, he perceives them rejected. At this midway point, he must stand and work. If he rises towards the ideal world, he loses touch with common things. But if he descends to the level of materialistic activity, he loses the precious perceptions that are the mainspring of his inner being. Between these two worlds, he is poised in order that he may gain understanding, an understanding that includes the highest and the lowest, the good and the bad, the lofty and the insignificant. The knowledge gained brings him disillusionment. Peering into human hearts, he perceives the obscure shadows, the sediment of strange passions. He discovers the base means that some people will use to establish their success, the dark spots in the lives of reputable men, and the clever ways by which they evade their conscience. He observes the budding ideas which are frozen out before they can even grow, and he contemplates the long onward march of the human race with its sporadic achievement and its multitude of failings. With all this observation, the good and the bad, the discernment of right from wrong, the glamours surrounding him are gradually weakened and dispelled. He sees more clearly and recognizes that man lives in a swirling mist of illusion, clinging to life as an end in itself. The Libran is not at all sure he cares to take part in this aggressive struggle to make a living and to push his way forward belligerently to a place of power and prestige. He concerns himself with other human beings and their struggles. The motive of service thus takes root in his life, a sense of service based on a realistic appraisal of human nature. This isn't so easy, because when you inform a man of a truth that would, if accepted, alter his stereotyped way of life, he will stubbornly insist on his own beliefs or display a remarkable indifference to your attempts to help. We're told that whoever would serve the human race must be prepared for misunderstanding, misinterpretation, and the perversity that upholds the opposite of what is said. The Libran is not inclined to be either a zealot or a tyrant. They're seeking to persuade rather than compel. He understands the art of spiritual compromise. This involves a willingness to yield on all non-essential points and an understanding that heaven is reached by a series of separate steps rather than one single salvational leap. Serving others requires an accurate appraisal of their capacities. To expect from them that which they are incapable of giving is both unwise and very frustrating. The help given to a person must find expression within the framework of his limitations. If this is not done, aid may prove to be an impediment. A careful distinction must be made between too much aid and too little. If too much is given, the individual will not be encouraged to use his own resources, whereas too little may cause him to sink in a sea of despair. In other words, the help given must be carefully suited to the needs of the individual involved. Any comments on this before we move on?
The only thing I'd like to add here is there have been several times that you used words that would indicate that a Libran really thinks. In other words, it's an air sign, so he really thinks, whether he's discerning, whether earlier on when you spoke of the labor, you used a few words there that I thought to myself, well, that is indicative of him using his mind. That is indicative of him using his mind. In spite of the fact that the Libran is pleasure-seeking, you know, when you pleasure-seek, you're fulfilling your desire nature. But in other times, he's got to use his mind, whether it is in helping other people and finding that balance. It's got to be a thought-out process.
Exactly. Thank you. The constant weighing and measuring so characteristic of Libra have one aim, and that's the establishment of equilibrium. That's what they're doing, as you suggested, Eva. They're using that mind to help them achieve that poise and equilibrium there. The world is upheld by that equilibrium, and this the Libran understands. As a matter of fact, the laws of karma may be considered as equilibrizing activities that prevent the continuance of an unbalanced condition. In other words, we learn to balance ourselves, or karma is going to balance us for us. The catastrophes that befall a man are meant not to punish, but to restore this equilibrium in his nature. He who establishes that equilibrium in his own life will not be obliged to have it imposed on him by the harsh, bludgeoning circumstances. The scales of Libra are easily tipped on either side, but the midpoint on which the balance rests remains unchanged. this is the point of equilibrium, the secure retreat which the fluctuating shadows of earthly upheavals and catastrophes can never menace. It should be pointed out here that equilibrium is a dynamic rather than a static condition. Some of us think of it as we have to maintain that status quo. You know, we can't move one way or the other without upsetting the apple cart. But that's not true. It's a constant endeavor to work, to proceed, to manifest things, to live your life, to learn at the same time that you are maintaining that equilibrium. A balanced system of energies would be a more adequate definition, or it might be called an ordered arrangement of energies that are directed and controlled by an overarching will to good. The fully developed man or the initiate might perhaps be described in these terms also. In the midst of dissonance, the Libran cherishes the dream of harmony. In the far country, he remembers his father's house. In memory thereof, he seeks to be a point of peace in the sea of clashing forces. This is the goal, but not always the achievement. However, this longing for harmony strengthens in him a desire to be a peacemaker. He can usually understand both sides of the issues, and this ability serves him well as a mediator and an arbitrator. The energies he employs are persuasion, courtesy, and cooperation. When these fail, he disdains harsher methods. He is naturally inclined towards group work and is attracted by all programs of action that promote brotherhood and unity. And in this stately sign of balance and justice in the law, we find that this test ends in a burst of laughter. And it's the only labor that does. Hercules didn't use brute force in taking the boar captive. He set his trap, he waited patiently, and then he tamed the boar gently, not coercively. And down from the mountain he went, trundling the boar like a wheelbarrow, singing and laughing. And it made all the onlookers laugh with him. And so we observe the Libran's ability to find unusual solutions and perceive the value of the incongruous. Matters of great consequence in the history of mankind are determined by unusual approaches to common problems like this. This perception of incongruities is one of the greatest weapons given to mankind in this perpetual fight against glamour. It is the source of laughter that explodes the presence and destroys those outmoded institutions. Not only does Hercules perform the task assigned, but he makes this ferocious boar an object of ridicule. So by slightly altering the perspective, many of the terrifying experiences of life were transformed by a beneficent sense of humor. Much of what people regard with grave and serious earnestness has decidedly ridiculous overtones. I don't know if we can all look at that when we're living through them, but how often have you said, well, I can look back on that and laugh at it now? The graphic description of Hercules driving that boar by its hind legs is a symbolic representation of the soul directing the ungainly body. The relationship in which each aspect achieves due importance is characteristic of the highly organized Libran. And thus is the principle of balance observed. And then, of course, we noted, even though there was the great tragedy of the death of his friends, even though he actually failed the test of friendship here, what his wise teacher told him later, he actually passed lightly over the brawl because Hercules was not the only one who contributed to it. They all had a part in it. And he merely said to Hercules, ponder upon the lessons of the past, which is Libra's assessment. Twice you have slain that which you should love. Learn why. We are reminded that the personality actually remains outside the ashram. Our teachers see only whatever light we bear. They see our soul light, but they don't see our personality. There is no special praise. Hercules just passed this labor. But the seventh labor was declared complete. It had justice with mercy. Okay.
So, DL?
Yes.
The DK tell us who these two that were slain represent?
Yes.
Does it represent part of his form, any of his vehicles? Like, what do you think it represents?
Here. Pholus was bodily strength, and carry on was good thought. So this is the physical and this is the mind. Mm-hmm. And he needed both to demonstrate control over the desire nature. One wasn't enough. Both were necessary.
And we know that he caved in. His desire nature actually took over.
Yes.
In a social way, when we know that Libra is very social and likes to cavort with friends and drink and dine and all that kind of stuff. So he took advantage of that environment that he found himself in and allowed that desire nature to take over.
Right. So he swung so far off the middle with that. It was just, you know, such a drastic extreme, and it took a drastic extreme to right the situation. Mm-hmm. That was that reference to karma we saw. Basically, you keep the equilibrium or it will be restored for you.
Right. There was another thing that this labor has in it that certainly has given me pause for thought, and that is the unusual way that apparently Librans can come up with ways to handle various situations. And I've observed in Librans that does many times show itself. And I wonder if it has anything to do with Uranus, which is the soul ruler, as opposed to the personality ruler. And we did say that the unusual way in which he came down holding that boar had to do with a soul. So I wonder if Uranus, which is the planet of being different, of uniqueness, of doing things in a quirky kind of way, is maybe responsible here for the Libran coming up with this unusual way, as in this labor, of handling the boar.
You know, I think that's a very good point. You know, if we look at the words that were used in this labor to describe that, it was unusual solutions and incongruous situations that were dealt with through that. So that's exactly what that sounds like to me. Mm-hmm. You know, you think of a Libra and you think of that life of the party, always laughing and friendly to everyone else. But that's exactly what they're doing. They're using that humor and goodwill to bring people together who normally wouldn't be together. You know, whether it's in a party or whether it's mediating or, you know, and all those things were brought out here. So it's always... I always learn more every time I read this.
Right, me too.
Okay, so there's always a balancing act that we've got going on with Libra. In this case, it's actually a masculine sign, as are all the odd signs, but it carries with it a very strongly feminine element as well, since Venus is the esoteric ruler.
I think it's the exoteric.
I'm sorry. Yes, exactly. The hard driving thrust of modern life is too aggressively masculine, and the softer grace and artistic beauty of the feminine component acts as a complementary influence. The Libran understands this, knowing masculine assertiveness must be modified by those subtler feminine sweetness. When the Libran has assimilated the soft harmonies of Venus, he begins to respond to that other vibration, that of Uranus, the esoteric ruler. Then it's possible to look at things with fresh eyes. The old forms are understood to be chains and shackles. They must be discarded as the broom sweeps away the debris of the ages in order that the high ideals of brotherhood and unity may be incorporated into the very structure of our institutions. The lives men lead may reflect the divine image that is indelibly imprinted in their essential being. Yet this revolutionary change is not to be accomplished by rearrangement of the outer shapes, forms, or institutions. It must originate within the human mind, in the silence of a man's heart, when he turns towards the light that shines upon him from the residue of immortality that dwells within him. The Libran sets out to remake himself, knowing that this is the first step towards remaking the world. So here we've got the mind component in there that you brought in, Eva. And as we see here, the quality is that of equilibrium, that interlude where duality is known and the life of the soul and form is balanced. Its opposite is Aries, a fire sign, the will to incarnate. We talked about the rulers.
You know, Libra definitely can use a little bit of the Aries quality of the Martian quality of Aries. You know, that get up and go, that directness, that that kind of forceful energy, which the Librans don't use. They're so wishy-washy sometimes because they think it's going to, you know, upset the balance. I think the combination of the two lines of force coming together and being in the middle there, I'm talking here specifically about Libra and Aries, would be being in the middle, would be exactly the middle path that these two great lines of force lead to.
Right. Yeah, it's, you can't live life in a vacuum, and you can't look at the signs that way either. You always have to look at the relationships that they form. We talked about this in your astrology webinar the other day too. You know, those opposites are very important. So let's see what it says here. The opposite sign of Libra, that at one moment must be made, is Aries, who, exactly what you just said, the exoteric ruler is Mars, while the ruler of Libra is Venus. So therefore, those two must be at one. It's the will and the higher mind expressing itself through desire or love, depending on your status of evolution. Mm-hmm. Then the esoteric ruler of Uranus kicks in, and Saturn is the hierarchical ruler, and the three of those work together in their different components. And it is for this reason that Libra is closely connected with and explains the third aspect of the Godhead. And it is a major determining factor where law, sex, and money are concerned. DK actually tells us that if the students will make a careful study of these three, the law, which is the first divine aspect, the relation between the pairs of opposites, or sex, which is the second divine aspect, and the concretized energy we call money, which represents the third aspect, as they express themselves today, and they can express themselves in the future, we will then have a better picture of physical human achievement and of the future spiritual expression. So this whole process can be accounted for in those three words, law, sex, and money, through the rulers Venus, Uranus, and Saturn. It's one of those things, I don't know about you all, but I have a little folder of every time he says ponder on this. Well, heck, somebody made a whole book on that. You know, but that I always consider that like homework. This is something to go back to over and over again and look at.
These three rulers, if we just rearrange them a little bit, they will fit under those three characteristics of law, sex, and money. Law being, as you said, first aspect. Uranus also conveys the first ray, so that could easily be there. Sex, as we know, requires two people, and Venus is that planet of love and relationships, so it can definitely be in there, and it's the second aspect. And then the third aspect, money, is concretized energy, and Saturn does convey the third ray. So each one of these planets could easily, you know, you can draw a line to those words, and they could be we could see how these planets could represent them.
Right. I know. It's, like I said, it's just so fascinating to me to sit and find these little pearls that he has, you know, throughout these books. Gives it kind of the aha moment.
I haven't quite seen that before. I'm just looking at this slide, and as I'm looking at it, you mentioned the three aspects. I'm saying, hey, yeah, it just works so well in there.
Yeah, they do. They do, and that's, you know, that's in the actual labor. This is notes I took from the labor. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's see what else we have here. Peculiar beauty emerges when considering the Aries-Libra keynotes. We can see them here, but in the book, they're actually talking about the ones that Dane Rudger gives in his book, Gifts of the Spirit. The note for Libra is ease, but it is far from the ease of luxurious comfort. The author defines it as an expression of totally accepted relatedness, be it with an object, a situation, or a person. Men can only be free from nature by fulfilling nature, by fulfilling it with ease and with elegance. By elegance, we mean that quality which the mathematician has in his mind when he speaks of the elegant solution of a mathematical problem, a solution which moves on with extreme ease, with the utmost simplicity of means, and with a minimum of intermediary steps, with inherent logic. A redwood tree is likewise the elegant solution of the problem contained in the seed, a perfectly easy and logical development of the potentialities inherent in that seed. Natural growth of inherent potentialities, ease and logic of development, elegance of unfoldment, These are jewels of the art of living. These are the tests of mastery. Then turning to Aries, Roger goes on to say the keynote is adaptability, which indicates a method by which the ease of Libra may be obtained. We know of men and women in history and about us now who move with poise and power amidst tragic happenings. And what an awesome, inspiring sight it is. We find adaptability also in the camouflage of the animal kingdom, in the coloring of birds and beasts, which helps to protect their lives. Man, in dangerous circumstances, has an equal need for camouflage, in his case, for increased adaptability. This immediately raises a query to the dangers of compromise, deserting principles for safety. But just as the Tibetan has told us, that spiritual compromise may be a recognition of time and evolution, not involving any treachery to the goal. So we read the following by Rudyard. This type of social adaptation should not be such as to divert or muddy the flow of the release of power. It should not alter the quality of the projected images or the vision they convey. It is a difficult task of discrimination to be adaptable yet retain the purity and focal integrity of one's vision and ideal, to accept detours yet not lose the direction of the goal, to use the values born of the past yet not sell short the future of the uncertain present, to be kind to men yet uncompromisingly true to the spirit. Such are the problems that the Aries person will constantly meet in one form or another. So the individual who is consecrated and true to the spirit acts as the spirit in terms of human needs. So ease and adaptability. Libra at one-ment with its opposite sign, Aries. The keynotes of this sign are clear and plain. They speak straight to the heart and without obscurity. To the average man with no developed spiritual consciousness, the word goes forth again and again throughout the eons. And the word said, let choice be made. The response eventually comes back as a result of the evolutionary process and from the soul. I choose the way which leads between the two great lines of force. Now what I'd like to do is add a couple of passages from esoteric astrology that I think help us understand this a little better. But hold on just one second. Sorry about that. I had to cough. Any comments before I move on? Okay. For the disciple, Libra leads on to Scorpio, and the active soul life is registered through the medium of the personality nature and not simply on its own plane. It was recorded and noted in Virgo and balanced and assessed in Libra, and will eventually bring about the tests and trials between the soul and the personality in Scorpio. Here the personality is holding on, trying to keep at least a balance, if not the majority, but the soul proves to be too much and tips the scales in the soul's favor. Then came the interlude where a point of balance is reached between the soul and personality and neither is dominant. The scales tipped back and forth in either direction. As it is sometimes expressed, man swings between the pairs of opposites. Let's see. It provides the curious seesaw experience which proves so distressingly bewildering to the man who thought he was entirely human and now finds the divinity within him but can't yet fully express it. His focus of interest and his aim is the soul life, yet he finds himself still being drawn back to the old habits and the old desires. And that's what we saw with Hercules when he took that detour that caused so much havoc. Okay, so Libra is one of the air signs, intellectual, a good communicator, but it could be too detached. As Eva brought up earlier, it's all about the mind. All the air signs are. In Gemini, the mind causes that duality to be sensed. In Libra, it's the supermind, duality overcome by that equilibrium. And in Aquarius, it's the universal mind, duality resolved by synthesis. As I mentioned earlier, it's a masculine sign, but it has a lot of feminine overtones. But all the air signs are masculine, as are the fire signs. It's that yang energy, outgoing, expressive, and giving. They represent the day, and they're related to the 1357 ray line. Air signs are compatible with fire signs. They work out the issue of the axes relationships, and they do that through the trines and sextiles, which are, of course, favorable aspects. Although I've always thought you need some of those squares to get you off your bottom and make you do anything, sometimes there's too much of a good thing makes us lazy. When we look at esoteric astrology, it also points out that Libra can be spoken of in terms of the meditation process. Remember earlier I mentioned that it could be thought of as a form of balance and equilibrium in meditation. It's regarded as the interlude between two activities. In the five stages of meditation, you have concentration, meditation, contemplation, illumination, and then inspiration. And these five stages are paralleled in the five strictly human signs of the zodiac. Leo is concentration, soul life focused in form. It's individualization, self-consciousness, undeveloped in average man. It's the human experience. Virgo is meditation. It's the soul life as sensed in man, the gestation period. It's the stage of the hidden Christ, intelligent man, personality hiding the Christ life. Then Libra is contemplation. It's the life of the soul and form balanced. Neither dominates. It's an interlude wherein the soul organizes itself for battle and the personality waits. This is the probationary path where duality is known. Then comes Scorpio illumination, where the soul triumphs. The experience in Taurus is consummated. Astral glamour is dissipated. Soul light pours in. This is the path of discipleship. And then Sagittarius is inspiration. It's the preparation for initiation. The soul inspires the personality life, and it expresses itself through the personality. Let me see what I've got here. There's a little more, well, obviously, in esoteric astrology about the rulers that I'd like to go into here. Do I have time? Yeah, I think I do. Venus rules Taurus, Libra, and Capricorn, and is the source of the intelligent mind, acting either through desire in the early stages or love in the later stages. In Taurus, this means the mind expressing itself through intelligent desire, for that is the goal of knowledge for ordinary man. In Libra, the point of equilibrium is attained between material personal desire and intelligent spiritual love, for the two qualities of cosmic desire are brought to the fore in the consciousness in Libra, and they're balanced one against the other. In Capricorn, it stands for spiritual love, expressing itself perfectly when the work in Taurus and Libra has been accomplished. And so the evolutionary progress can be traced from sign to sign. Going back to our analogy from earlier, we see that Taurus represents the animal kingdom, law, and the nature of law. That Libra represents the vegetable kingdom, sex, and natural affinity. And that Capricorn represents the mineral kingdom, money, and the concrete expression of the law of supply. So the three rulers that we talked about earlier are now expressed through these three signs. See, Uranus is the esoteric ruler, and it's of supreme importance in this sign, for the seventh ray works through this planet is the embodiment of the principle of concretion. There we go. It is materializing that which is needed by bringing together spirit and matter. And this is the mystery of money. The third aspect of divinity is concerned with the creative process. It is through the relation of the three aspects of the third divine manifestation, law, affinity, and concretized energy, that money is then created. And it is here that many mystics and world servers prove futile. They work from far too high a level and from the standpoint of spiritual incentive. They normally and naturally, because that is their focus of consciousness, they work from the standpoint of the second aspect, whereas it's the third aspect, equally divine and equally important, which must be invoked. It is not the bringing together of spirit and matter, as occultism understands those terms, but it is the relating of the physical need and the physical supply and the bringing together of two tangibles through the power of the creative imagination. It is for this reason that so many schools of thought prove so successful in materializing that which is required, and while other schools of thought significantly fail. They work from too high a plane and have not the ability to carry it through from right motive in group formation and with selfless purpose. Through this planet, Uranus, Libra is also related to Aries and Aquarius, and it is through Uranus that the great pair of opposites, Aries-Libra, are brought into touch with each other in a very deep sense. It allows for the attainment of the equilibrium in Libra that was begun in Aries. In this sign, Saturn is exalted. It is at the point of balance. Opportunity comes and a situation is staged which makes a choice and a determination inevitable. It is a choice which has to be made intelligently and upon the physical plane, in the waking brain and consciously. It is only now that the full purpose and the work of Saturn for humanity can reach a point of group usefulness. For it is only now that humanity has reached a point of general and widespread intelligence which can make any choice a definite conscious act. Prior to the present time, only a few pioneering disciples and a handful of intelligent people could be regarded as freely choosing the point of balance in the way that they intended to tip the scales. Today, there are countless numbers of people who can do that. As we enter the first decan of Aquarius, which is the Saturn decanate. And this is because humanity now stands on the probationary path. This Libra governs and controls. It's therefore the path of choices, of deliberately applied purifactory measures, and the turning point before Scorpio, which governs the path of discipleship. Okay, let's see. And on the cardinal cross, again from esoteric astrology, Libra is one of the four arms. The significance of the energies working out into our solar system through the medium of the four arms of this cross, Aries, Cancer, Libra, and Capricorn, can be summed up in the four words creation, manifestation, legislation, and initiation. Creation is Aries activity. Cosmically, they mean the activity of the deity when spirit and matter are brought into a definite relationship under divine purpose and produce that fusion of living energy which will be adequately potent in time and space. Manifestation is Cancer. Objective appearing of the thought form which God has thus created and in which it is embodied his desire, his will, his purpose, and his plan. Legislation is Libra, working out of the plan under spiritual and natural law, which is evolutionary in expression. This is the goal of evolution and its expression and steadily revealing nature of God. And initiation, the activity of Capricorn. The processes of initiation wherein step by step and stage by stage, under law and through the method of gained experience, the creative plan is realized in consciousness. The unfoldment of the plan is thus carried forward through a progressed series of beginnings, manifestations, and consummations, all relative in nature, but leading to an absolute consummation. When this understanding unfolds, then man becomes an initiate. He vacates his position on the fixed cross and begins the relatively slow process of mounting the cardinal cross. Then he becomes a cooperator of the great creative process and purpose. He begins to create his own body of expression upon the cardinal cross, and the impulses of Aries begin to appear in him. As yet, he understands it not. He manifests consciously in the world that which he intends to carry forward, and Cancer then reveals to him his secrets. He becomes his own legislature, ruling his conduct wisely, controlling his impulses intellectually, and then Libra enables him to balance the material and the spiritual law. When he has done all this, he discovers himself ready into new and deeper experiments, or should I call them experiences. And as a participator in the divine plan and a cooperator in the divine purpose, he then becomes his own initiator and is thus ready to take initiation in Capricorn. Such are the paradoxes of the spiritual life. And so, that's what we see with the cardinal signs. Specifically here, we also see the synthesized axes that work out. Aries, Libra, establishing that balance, mental control, and then soul control over the personality. And Cancer, Capricorn, honing and nurturing the sensitivity and intuition of the soul in preparation for that initiation, where the head and heart meet and the soul controls. And actually, on the cardinal cross, on all of the crosses as you master them, you stand at the hub in the middle. So it's not just the axes that are balanced, but they're balanced against the squaring axes. And you stand there at the balance of the whole square. So, any comments on that before we wrap this up quickly? So, progress through the signs. We're now in the four signs of physical plane struggle, trying to balance the pairs of opposite in Libra. And I'd like to thank you all for participating. Hope you enjoyed it. Or those of you who might look at it later, hope you enjoy it. We're going to have the next one, 26 October, and it will be on Scorpio. So, any questions?
No, thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciated your input, as always. And I'll see you next time, or at your next one, or whenever.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.